It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Easy to brew and use on all indoor and outdoor plants. Find them online at manuretea.com.
You asked for it, you got it. Access the Rose Chat Podcast app from your iPhone or Android device. Find instructions at rosechatpodcast.com.
Well, hey, y'all, and welcome to this edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. We're so glad you've joined us. Anita Clevenger is our guest tonight. She's a curator at the Sacramento Historic Rose Garden, located in the historic Sacramento City Cemetery. Now, this garden recently was awarded the Great Rosarians of the World Garden Hall of Fame Award for its ongoing efforts by volunteers to preserve heritage roses. Now, this historic garden has a collection of over 400 roses, representing some 200 varieties of vintage, old garden, and historic rose varieties.
You know, I personally fell in love with old garden roses in the 80s when I was reading the journal of a young woman who left the comfort of the East to go west with her young family, and they headed out on the Oregon Trail. Now, in the story, she wrote of taking cuttings of her roses with her, and it piqued my interest for sure. Now, Anita has some great news for rose lovers who want to enjoy a little piece of history in their own gardens. Their upcoming Open Garden Day is April 18th, and she'll tell us all about that and so much more.
We'll be right back. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the rose photography contest, visit ars.org.
Welcome back to Rose Chat Podcast, sponsored by Haven Brand Soil Conditioners and SW Greenhouse.
Well, Anita, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're so glad to have you, and congratulations on the Great Rosarian of the World Award. That's quite an honor.
It is. We were very surprised and pleased to get it. I believe that it's our volunteer effort and the fact that we focus on preserving roses that are otherwise lost. We have collected roses from many sites. When we return to them, we find that there's maybe just a stump of the rose or no sign of it existing at all. And so by us collecting them and having them in our garden, they're saved.
So that's how this garden's come to be. This garden has come to be, just the collection of different people that have brought them to this place.
The primary collection started with Fred Botine, who was a botanist at the Huntington and is a rose lover and expert. And as he traveled through California in the mother lode, he kept finding roses that didn't look like anything he'd seen before. He was intrigued, as any good botanist and rose lover would be, and began to collect them and study them and try to identify what it was that he was finding. And so he had amassed quite a collection. He wasn't the only person doing that, and became familiar with other people who were collecting roses, and then discovered that the Sacramento Cemetery was encouraging people to garden once again in the cemetery in a way to begin to maintain the grounds, and had the idea that his rose collection and those of other collectors could be put into our cemetery.
Now, Anita, that's sort of a concept that a lot of folks in today's world are unfamiliar with, the phrase gardening in the cemetery. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, in Victorian times, many of the cemeteries were garden cemeteries, and ours certainly was. If you go out into the foothills, even today, or into the old communities, you will often find old roses still clinging to life, as well as shrubs, things like hollies or other types of flowering shrubs, maybe lilacs. People took care of their graves by putting plants that would live much longer than cut flowers would in honor of their loved ones who are buried there.
Mm. And maybe could you talk a little bit about the roses that are in the garden? Tell us a little bit about the collection.
Well, it's primarily roses of the 19th century, roses that we either know were grown in California because we have old nursery catalogs and records of what people grow, or at least are the type of rose that would be grown during that time. Our cemetery really was active from the beginning of 1850, which is still the height of the gold rush when Sacramento was being founded as a city. But then by the end of the 19th century, it no longer was the place that people used. It had moved, gotten filled up, and some new lawn cemeteries were established. And so our garden really just, and our cemetery fell into neglect because there was no longer active burials or people taking care of the plots.
Mm-hmm. Wow. When is the peak time for your roses in the garden?
Pardon? Could you repeat that?
When is the peak time for bloom in the garden?
Well, this year we're early. And so what we have is we're close to peak bloom right now. Usually it's the middle of April, which is when we've scheduled our open garden. Because we have so many different types of roses, from Banksia roses that bloom very early and climb up trees and cover structures, to late-blooming old garden roses and rambling roses. There still will be plenty to see throughout the month of April.
Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine the fragrance. Is it just overwhelming when they're all in bloom in the spring?
Well, I'm told that it is. Like many rose gardeners, I've developed quite a bit of allergy myself. Every now and then my head clears and it's intoxicating. But at one point a woman came who was at a store a block away and said that she had stood in the parking lot and said, "Why do I smell roses?" And she was directed towards the cemetery and told to walk towards us, and that's probably what she was smelling. And she walked in through our front gate saying, "This is wonderful." So, yes, the scent is indeed overpowering.
It probably permeates much of your side of Sacramento. It's probably something that you're known for. You just don't get to enjoy it, but I'm sure everyone else is.
Right. And we have roses trained along a fence that overlooks the sidewalk, and so they hang down to people walking past or waiting for the bus stop. And one time a mother with two little ones said, "We just love that there's rose petals all over our sidewalk as we walk to the bus." And I just love that we share it in many ways that we don't even realize, fragrance and beauty even that falls to the ground.
And what a teaching tool the mom has. She can teach history right on the way to the bus stop.
Right, yeah. But what we have is we began in 92 to bring in much of Fred's collection and roses that other people had collected. Our first planting was about 100, and gradually we filled up 3 acres with a variety of different types of old found roses, mostly roses collected from other cemeteries and historic sites. But we also have quite a few species roses because they tell a lot about how roses came to be. And Victorians grew species roses too, so we grow them as well.
Now, when you speak a lot about Victorian times, and I often see pictures of you on social media in Victorian costume. I'm assuming that's not your day clothes, that you actually do educational tours there.
That's right. Our cemetery is famous for doing fall lantern tours, where we tell some of the more blood-curdling stories about the Wild West and what happened to people who lived here back in the day. And we volunteers, who are part of the nonprofit Old City Cemetery Committee, help put that on. So my original Victorian costume was just to participate in that. But then last spring, we decided we wanted to do an evening rose tour. So we did our first romance and roses tour. So I got a rose sprigged calico gown for that. So I'm now up to two Victorian gowns, and I'll bet that's not going to be the end of it.
We bet not too.
Right.
We'll be doing
Romance and Roses again this year. It will be on the 25th of April, and we'll be telling stories about romantic tales of people who are buried in our midst, as well as romance, how the rose is figured in romance throughout the centuries. So we'll have a lot of stories to tell.
Now, speaking of stories, there's been a documentary made at the Cemetery of Roses. Could you share how this documentary came to be?
Well, as we approached our 20th anniversary, I really wanted to document some of the founders of the garden and be able to get their stories recorded while it was still fresh in everyone's mind. And so Fred Wittine was interviewed, Barbara Oliva, who was the curator of the garden until recently, who worked out there for more than 20 years keeping the garden going, also was interviewed. We did a lot about just how these roses came to be and discussion about why it's important that they're saved. We even went out into the Mother Lode to go look at one of the old cemeteries and see what roses were there. And so that documentary was a very important thing for us, to record the people and the roses and the purpose of the garden, and we're just thrilled that we have that.
Anita, I'm particularly fond of the story of the little rose that came west by the wagon train from Arkansas. Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Well, that was one of our stories on Romance and Roses last year, because it truly is romance along the wagon train. The Abbott and Burns family were two families that, with some others, left Arkansas in 1857. And the family says that one of the girls of the family took along a rose, and you mentioned taking along cuttings. This is such a little rose that I think it's even possible that she had it in a little pot to bring along, because it's a little miniature China rose. One of our volunteers told me that he had this rose in the family. It's actually a sister-in-law's family, and that it had been passed along through all the generations all these years. And I thought it wasn't very likely, because miniature roses really are a 20th century rose. But then when I looked at it, it looks just like roses in the old illustrations that were sold in America. They were called Lorenciano roses back in the 1840s. So it's very likely that, in fact, this is exactly the rose that was brought along with the family. They had tremendous adventures going across the plains, as folks often did, and narrowly, well, they did lose a couple people during the long, arduous journey. And when they got to California, one of the young women and one of the young men from the wagon train married. And they've been passing this rose along to their descendants and the cousins of their descendants all these years. And now it grows in our garden, too.
Wow. That's just amazing. We actually have a clip from this documentary called Cemetery Rose, and I think it is yourself and Barbara, the curator emeritus, giving a little bit of background and insight into the plight of some of these old roses, and then Barbara sort of tells a funny story. Let's see if we can cue that up and listen.
And often they're lost. They're out in a median strip, or they're in an old cemetery, and someone comes in and uproots them or sprays them with Roundup, and that's the end of it. A lot of people don't think it's at all important, because who the heck cares whether you save a rose? A pink rose is a pink rose is a pink rose. Roses, first of all, provide some history, give a sense of and a peek into what was happening during gold rush times and Victorian times.
And I always liked the way just learning about the roses can help make history come alive.
And suddenly somebody said rose, and the brakes went on. Well, what do we do? I said, you hold that barbed wire apart, and I'm going in. The rose in the cemetery garden is the pasture rose that I collected from the pasture.
Anita, I get such a wonderful image in my mind when I hear Barbara talk about just riding down the road and seeing a rose.
Yeah, I thought we should have bumper stickers that say, warning, I break for roses, because it really can be a bit of a hazard if we spot something we need to go look at.
That's right. And I'm sure you're amongst those, and most of your group are. Always have a pair of pruners and a Ziploc bag and a wet paper towel.
We do indeed. And a piece of plastic tape. We use the surveyor's tape and a Sharpie so we can write on it what it is we've collected and where. And I, of course, if we don't know really much about it, we give it a found name. We give it a descriptive name that says whatever it was that we found. And so that rose that Barbara's telling about is Barbara's pasture rose. That's what its name is on its tag and in our catalog. And looking out my window right now, I'm looking at Barbara's pasture rose. Most of us grow it at our home because it's such a wonderful rose.
Wow.
That's what you don't get from the audio, and that is that this rose is absolutely stunning. It's a big, luscious, cabbage-looking pink rose. I'm so glad. Barbara scaled the barbed wire to save it.
Yeah, well, she actually kind of shinnied under it, I think. Her word is stooped. But I've been told, I wasn't along on that trip, but I've been told that when folks have been by that pasture, that rose is no longer there. So probably at some time there was a home there, and the rose survived. And now the place that it lives on is with us and with the many people who have purchased this rose and grow it at their house. We make sure we always have it as one of the roses that we offer during our open garden.
Yeah. Now, since this is a city cemetery, I'm sure that there must be a very strong partnership between your organization and the city, maybe the Parks and Rec Division of the city of Sacramento.
Well, there's actually several departments that are interested in what happens in the cemetery. Certainly Parks oversees the overall maintenance, and we work in partnership with them. The Sheriff's Work Project also brings in men who would otherwise be incarcerated, and they come and do work in the cemetery in lieu of jail time, and those folks are a real key part of what we do because they do literally the heavy lifting. They spread the mulch, they pick up the prunings, they do a lot of the weeding, so that partnership's really key to us as well. We're also considered a historical place. We were designated and put on the National Register of Historic
places. So we are recognized at state and local as well as national levels. So our city historian is very involved. And our city preservation officer is concerned about the integrity of the grounds. And so it is a complex set of teamwork that you have to do to maintain this. And we volunteers work hard to do it consistently with what they'd like, and I think we've succeeded very well.
Well, I'll tell you, I work with as a volunteer on our local beautification board, and I know that, and on a very small scale, and I can only imagine the complexity of how you guys have woven all that together to make this wonderful, welcoming place. You know, people don't really think of cemeteries as being a very welcoming place, but you guys have really accomplished that. I just want to commend you for it. Yeah.
Well, and in fact, it was that sort of place back in the day, back in Victorian times. It was really equivalent to parks, cemeteries were. And families would go out, tend the graves. They might even bring a picnic. Children would play in the cemetery. They were active and beautiful places. But, of course, ours didn't look like that for decades. And we've been able to restore that, and we're very proud of that. Today, our governor did announce great cutbacks because of the drought in California. And we've worked very hard to conserve water for this collection and watering sparingly and mulching heavily to try to make every drop of water count. And so we're keeping our fingers crossed that we can keep it going and keep these roses lush and beautiful even with California's water shortage.
Oh, yes. Now, you're getting ready to have your open garden day, so you have to tell us all about that.
Well, this is a tradition that's gone on probably for 20 years. Barbara doesn't remember exactly when she first had the idea to invite people in, but I know that that's what brought me in, that I read about it and told my neighbor, who had been collecting found roses and loved old roses, that he and I needed to go over and take a look at it. And so it was a way she, in those days, sold the roses for just a few dollars in little 4-inch pots and led a tour or two. And so that's been a tradition, a way to announce, come in community and see what we have here. And it's evolved over the years. It now is a cemetery-wide open garden, and we have a perennial plant garden, an acre of perennials in the cemetery, as well as a native plant demonstration garden. And so folks are welcome to go visit all of those, and we all participate. There will be a historical tour, so we'll have costume docents leading a history tour. Mm-hmm. We'll sell the roses, and people will literally line up behind a tape, and we'll cut the tape and they'll run for the roses when the rose sale starts at 9:30. And so we have, and then we lead a series of tours right within the Rose Garden. It is one big party. One of our volunteers said, what Open Garden Day is a day for just enjoying the roses and enjoying the people who are here, you know, that it can be a bit overwhelming to coordinate it all, but we do it with a great smile on each one of our faces because it's a day we love.
Oh, I'm sure that it is. I so wish I could be there. Do you ever ship roses, or are all of them purchased that day?
They're purchased that day. No, we're not set up to do that. Yeah.
Well, so what you're saying is we're just going to have to get on a plane and come out there.
You are. Well, you would not have come the furthest for it. We had someone from Argentina there last year. We had folks Long Island. We've had someone there from there last year. We've had many visitors, not necessarily to Open Garden, but many visitors from around the world, from Japan and China and New Zealand and England and France. So you would not have traveled the furthest, but we would treat you very well if you came. We would be glad that you came.
Sounds like a wonderful event.
It is.
It takes a lot of volunteers, and people are always looking for ideas on recruiting and training their volunteers.
Well, Barbara talks about that, and I do too, a bit in our documentary. She began early offering classes, so classes in old garden roses, classes in how to prune, classes in how to propagate. And we've had a good partnership with the local media. They've been well advertised. And that was actually how I ended up starting to volunteer. I came to a pruning class, and I just froze. It was so cold the day that she gave it. And there was this woman considerably older than me, tough as nails, telling people how to prune the roses. And I came home and said, I've got to help her, at least for the pruning season. And my husband knew what was coming. One thing would lead to another, and I've been out there nearly 13 years now. But a big thing is the classes that we give. We also do a tremendous amount of outreach. We lead tours, both public and private. We go speak at a drop of a hat. I'm not the only one. If someone wants us to come talk about old roses and our cemetery, we gladly go out and talk about it. And every time we contact people, we give a mailing list and say, are you interested in receiving our newsletter? And we have a wonderful free quarterly newsletter. And also, would you like to volunteer? And then people who say they'd like to, maybe they will, maybe they won't. We just keep asking and reaching out. The other thing that we learned is that if we make it into a party or an event, people will come, especially if we feed them. And so we, at our pruning party, have various soups and good desserts, and people work all day, but they stop and have a feast mid-morning and a chance to visit. And then we do deadheading in the evening. We call it deadheading at dusk. And first thing in the morning, we call it deadheading at daybreak, and we bring in coffee and pastries and advertise it as an event, and people come out for it. So it's not easy, but we just, I just keep picturing that we just kind of pull together, you know, through a variety of ways, both dedicated volunteers who are out there every week, who are there very regularly, as well as people who come once or twice or several times a year.
I would think that the education part of it would be so key, because most people would say, oh, I can't do that. You know, it seems complicated, or they're rare. What if I do something wrong? What if I kill them? So I think your education probably just dispels that, and you put the right tools in their hands, and they can be successful at it. So I would imagine that would just be a great way to get people and to keep them.
Right, and things like deadheading, you know, that's just a pleasant activity. You stand and snip, and it's a lovely thing to do. And I tell them roses are tough. These are tough survivors. Mm-hmm. So I try to instruct and have other volunteers who can instruct, but it isn't a tremendously high-risk activity. We try to make sure that people clean their pruners from one rose to the next. We make sure that what the tools they have are sharp and clean, that they're using. But we also just have learned to relax and to really, we want people to enjoy the garden, to learn about the roses and to learn to love them and to enjoy it. And so we try to do everything that we do in a relaxed, happy manner.
Well, you know, seeing how much you love it, that just makes it infectious for other people as well.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
I would also say, I would also say that for someone just starting to learn about old garden roses, they can go to your website and read your catalog of roses. What a fascinating read. I mean, you get so much information. You know, it's like a mini class right there, just reading through your catalog.
Well,
I'm sure there's a lot of work to put together.
Well, Judy Eitzen is our webmaster and our newsletter editor and our catalog editor, and she just does fabulous work. And we're so lucky to have her be part of our effort, just as we have other volunteers with special skills, but Judy's are really essential to us communicating about the garden. But Jerry Jennings just has completed our annual sales catalog, and Judy should have it up on our website in a few days. Maybe even it's up now. And Teresa, you need to. Oh, it is. Sales catalog.
Awesome.
Doesn't it make you want to buy every one of those roses?
I do. I'm looking at this one and that one, thinking, oh, now why don't I have that? It's and the stories, you just get lost in the stories. It starts out, here beginneth the 2015 catalog of roses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, aren't you
keeping
it already?
Yes, and then the pictures are just stunning in it. We have so much fun developing that because we get to talk about the roses while we do it and debate really what their identities are and what's the best photo to show them and which roses we put in, because in fact we have something like 95 different varieties, so they couldn't all fit in the catalog. And so it's just another labor of love that we do, is putting together that stunning sales catalog.
Well, the love that you put into it shows, and all those that join you to do this. And it has been our pleasure to have you come and share with us about this beautiful, beautiful rose garden and the work that you're doing. And Anita, we wish you a huge crowd on Open Garden Day.
Well, let's hope we get it. And thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Well, now, for our listeners who want to learn more about this beautiful rose garden, you can visit their website at cemeteryrose.org. You can also go to oldcitycemetery.com and also learn more about this garden. Now, their open garden day is April 18th from 9:30 to 2 p.m. Right there in the garden, you can go to cemeteryrose.org and look at the catalog of roses that they'll have available to sale. And I'm sure any of you in that and the area would want to go by and take home some a little piece of this rose heritage for your own garden. This brings us to the end of another broadcast of the Rose Chat podcast. Until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.